Hello, and welcome to the first edition of Between the Rows for 2021. I'm Ed White, and I'll be your host this week. But first, a word from our sponsor.
I've been farming my whole life, and the one thing you can always count on is change. And now there's a new generation of inoculants from Lalemon Plant Care. New engineered granules in Lalfix Spherical for pulses and soybeans that provide improved handling and accurate metering. New Rhizobium and Lalfix Pro Yield that deliver improved nitrogen fixation and iron uptake in soybeans. I've seen a lot of change, but this Lalemon company, well, this changes everything. Contact your Lalemon sales representative today.
Welcome back to Between the Rows. As we begin a new year, it makes sense to look back at the market trends of 2020 and ponder whether those will carry on into 2021 or will they fade. We'll do that with Bruce Burnett of Glacier Markets Farm.
This is more about how much supply is the world going to have for both corn and soybeans, as well as wheat, as well as canola and other oil seeds. It's absolutely critical here, or we'll see how prices stay very, very high, or at least at elevated levels compared to the past number of years.
We'll talk with Mike Rain of the Western Producer about his newspaper's special edition on how Canadian farmers and agriculture have coped with and adapted to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Just overall, the ag industry has shown terrific resiliency, and but it's kind of built around being resilient, and so it makes sense that that happened.
But first, how much has changed in Western Canadian grain transportation in the last 25 years? The Fields on Wheels conference decided to take a look at that, and so will we. I'm now joined by Alan Dawson of the Manitoba Cooperator. Hello, Alan, and welcome to the show.
Well, hi, Ed. Thanks.
Hey, so Alan, I am sitting right now with in front of me an awesome two-page spread, like a centerfold of agriculture, and the headline is From Bad to Best. It's a great story that came out of the Fields on Wheels conference that both you and I covered in December. Can you tell listeners a little bit about what you took such an expansive look at here, and I guess really what the fascinating story is that a lot of people haven't maybe recognized?
Well, it's sort of like boiling the frog or whatever. You start off with warm water, you don't really notice it, and things heat up. And this is sort of the story, I guess, with the grain transportation, grain handling and transportation system in Canada over the last number of years. You and I have both covered that for a long time. And so at Fields and Wheels, it was the 25th anniversary, and Fields and Wheels was started to kind of look at the grain handling and transportation system in Western Canada. And so they were looking back, and, you know, as you probably recall, and lots of people, many people still think that our grain handling system is a bit of a basket case, and sometimes it is because of various problems. But there's been really big improvements in the system over time, and that some of that was brought out during Fields and Wheels, and I did a little bit of follow-up as well. And when you look back on it, there's been some tremendous changes over time in the system.
And you know, it's interesting looking back at that. Like you say, we've covered this for years. And what's funny is I've been working for the Western Producer for 26 years. So when, Fields and Wheels took a 25-year look back, it was like looking at the industry right from when I started covering it in depth. And, you know, it's funny, you often don't step back and look at these incredible improvements that have been made both on the crop production and of course, this conference, Fields on Wheels, is all about grain logistics and transportation. The incredible ability of the system to carry almost double the size of the crop. It's like you say about the frog in the water. It's hard to notice sometimes when these changes are happening in front of you.
That's right. It is quite remarkable. You know, like when we look back at 1995, there, as Mark Hemis, the grain monitor, pointed out at the meeting, you know, most of the grain was being delivered to wooden elevators and 5-ton trucks. There was something like 1,400 elevators, 1,434, I think, around that time. And Now we're around 402, and the trains are getting longer, and the cars are shorter and fatter, and holding the new cars, you know, 15% more grain. I think CP says it's high-efficiency trains. They're 8,500 feet long, and if they're made up of those new cars, between the higher-capacity cars and the longer train, they're moving 44% more grain in a train. So it's, you know, from 5-ton trucks to Super Bs and wooden elevators, some of them built in the 1920s, to concrete high-throughput elevators with loop tracks. It's a big change.
When I'm thinking back, you and I both, you know, covered, you know, in depth the 2013-14, you know, grain transportation crisis, which if I can dust off my mind to remember back then, but if I remember right, it was a combination of a brutally cold winter, but also an exceptionally large crop.
Right, it was a record.
And yet, as you pointed out in the story, this year's crop isn't much different.
Right. It looks like it's a slightly bigger than 13-14. And you know, really right from that time, 2013-14, we've had big crops. Now, fortunately, we've had, well, I was going to say good weather, but there's been some poor weather in there too, especially poor harvests and so on. But generally, much bigger crops. Like, we're sort of at a new plateau since that time, and doesn't show any signs of stopping, although we know that there will be, I don't know, hopefully not crop failures, but we know some years are worse than others in terms of ideal conditions to make a big crop. But it does seem that we're, you know, in new territory, and there's so much more grain to move.
And I think an interesting point you bring up in your story is that we don't, and you said this at the start of our talk here today, that we don't often recognize how much improvement there has been. And the point in your story is that as much as grain transportation ability and efficiency and capacity has increased, as long as crop gains are going along in lockstep with it, that doesn't take any pressure off the logistics system to continually increase its capacity, because there's not likely to be a point where we can just say, okay, there, we built it, it's done, that's enough, if crop production keeps increasing.
That's right. And you know, even now, and I'm sure you've been following some of the statistics from the Ag Transport Coalition that monitors weekly performance of the railways. And, you know, for a couple of months now, CN in particular has had some problems, specifically in certain corridors. And they haven't been, you know, they might be at 60% car fulfillment on time during the week the cars were ordered. And there's been a bit of a backlog. And I use that word advisedly, because it's maybe not some, I guess it is a bit of a grain backlog, but it's not like we're still moving record amounts of grain, the railways are, and yet we've got, and what's happened is that the grain companies, you know, with lots of grain to move, are ordering more cars. And so as you kind of touched on, the system expands, and yet the orders keep expanding too. And so we've got this kind of weird conflict, in the sense that you know, record, the railways are setting monthly movement, grain movement records, and yet the grain companies are recording that car performance, you know, on timely order, like on time for that week, have been falling behind in some cases, and still the grain companies, I think, are generally pleased with the service, although I know some corridors, some lines have had poorer service than others. But yeah, it's kind of a weird thing where we're setting records, and yet they're not necessarily keeping up with the demand. But it's as you say, a reflection of the railways demonstrate that they can deliver more, move more grain, the grain companies are putting them to the test, because generally most years you know, in Canada, there is more grain that wants to move, that can move during this current peak period, you know, like from fall until, you know, March kind of thing, when the demand is the biggest and the prices are generally the best. And yeah, so they're really pushing, and it's been a bit of a constraint in the past, and I guess it still is. So it's just this to and fro about more grain, more capacity, more grain, more capacity, which is kind of a good news story, obviously a good news story, but yeah, it's interesting how it's unfolding.
And I guess a little worry we might have niggling at the back of our minds right now is we had awesome grain transportation in the second half of the last crop year, once the pandemic hit, and it's been good this crop year too so far, even with some things falling behind, the actual amount moving is impressive. But I guess we've got to start thinking about what happens when all those other commodities start coming back more, wanting more rail capacity for themselves and more products moving around. Grain's been in a bit of a sweet spot for, you know, it's the one thing that absolutely has just kept moving. What happens when somebody else wants to use the rails too?
You're right. And that's a worry the Western Grain Elevator Association is, you know, worried about too. They're very pleased with the service they've been getting overall, but they do wonder what happens when, you know, more other commodities start moving in the rail, and how, you know, if grain will be rationed or how that will all unfold. I guess the railways hopefully will keep investing and expanding their capacity, but, you know, the railways, they want to be prudent users of their capital too, and they don't want to overbuild, and of course there's a tendency of the railway to want to move, you know, it's a pipeline, and it works most efficiently when it's sort of moving near capacity for the full year, and grain is kind of seasonal, and some other products are as well, so you have, you know, bigger demand at certain times of the year and lesser at the other, and it's a big sort of a balancing act in terms of moving product and how you use your capital to the best effect. And that, so there's a real, I guess, back and forth. And of course, the grain shippers feel that the railways are a bit of in the driver's seat, in the sense that seen as, you know, monopolies or regional duopolies or whatever. And so that, especially with grain being so beholden to rail, so much of it has to move that way because its other alternatives are just too expensive. So the railways do know that the grain, for the most part, will come to them eventually. And of course, that's the whole story of our whole career, I guess, Ed, like this struggle sort of between the shipper and the railway and trying to balance it all out.
Well, I guess, you know, you and I probably aren't, and farmers certainly aren't going to just stand up and applaud the railways for being just good citizens for the sake of being it. I guess there's always that cynicism in the farmer side of agriculture, but this is this big spread you did, and I did smaller stories on it, but you did this awesome, great spread that people should check out in the Manitoba Cooperator. It's a good, I guess, time for us to stand back and say, you know what, the grain logistics system has actually made some amazing gains, and that is really helped farmers be able to produce what they can produce.
Yeah, it's a good news story. You know, earlier in our careers, for years, we'd go to meetings and we'd hear people talk about what a basket case the system was, and there's a lot of politics and fighting, and definitely were some big problems. And I think it's good to see that something's been accomplished. And Mark Hemis, the grain monitor, you know, feels that Canada has probably got, if not the best, one of the best logistics systems in the world right now. And he points out, we have to be better because of our circumstances. We're so far from port, and we have mountains and winter and all those kind of things to deal with. So, yeah, it's great to see that this, after all the fighting and and so on, that there has been great progress.
Well, it's a nice way for us to move into 2021, and I thank you very much, Alan, for coming on the show today to talk to us about this.
Thanks a lot, Ed.
Alan Dawson is a reporter with the Manitoba Cooperator. This is Between the Rows. COVID-19 hit Canada like an earthquake. It severely shocked most of the world. Farmers have not been immune to this. But how specifically has Canadian agriculture and how have Canadian farmers been affected? Let's talk about that. I'm now joined by Mike Rain, the editor of the Western Producer. Hello, Mike, and welcome to the show.
Hey, Ed, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. And
well, we're into 2021.
Yeah, well, let me drag you one day back into 2020, which is December 31st, 2020, was when issue 53, I believe, of the Western Producer came out. Can you tell the readers, if they're not aware of it, I know some of our readers always look forward to this special edition we put out every year, but could you, for those that don't know much about it, explain to them what this last issue of the year is?
We have what we call one additional issue a year. We do put out the paper and on producer.com an edition every week, but at the end of the year we have a special edition, and that's what we call either issue 52. Or in the years when we actually have 53 editions per year, issue 53. And that special edition focuses on a theme. So we try and always have a theme that farmers will be interested in. And so, for instance, last year we did innovation around agricultural stability. So what is sustainable agriculture? This year, we... back in July, we were pretty optimistic that COVID might potentially be somewhat in the bag, or at least some light at the end of the tunnel by now. So we decided to have a look at COVID, how it's affected Canadian agriculture, and look for some of the undertold or untold stories around COVID in Canadian ag. And so our reporters and editors got their heads together. We kind of figured out what we thought farmers would want to know, and did our best to deliver on that.
So one thing that struck me throughout this whole crisis, but also which is highlighted by this special issue we put out, is just the amazing number of impacts that COVID-19 has had on the sector, on farming and agriculture in general, and also the quite stunning flexibility and strength of farmers, farming and agriculture to handle all these impacts and pretty much go on 90% like usual. Were you struck by that too?
Oh, definitely. I mean, let's just look at flexibility and resiliency. Now on the grain side, we grew one of the biggest crops in Canadian history this year. But we also, last year, we set a record for grain movement by rail. This past year, in 2020, we broke that record substantially. The amount of grain moved off farm. Now, I like to take a poke at the railways whenever I can. But in this case, they have made a lot of investments into infrastructure. But quite frankly, they've always said, well, we can move as much grain as is needed to meet the market. And however, when they don't have a lot of competition for crews and rail space, suddenly without a bunch of oil moving, because oil was of course heavily curtailed due to COVID, suddenly the railways were able to move a lot more grain. And so we saw that flexibility and that overall resiliency. Now producers at their end, of course, were able to keep the elevators full. Producers also found that you've got to make this thing work. So when it came to trying to keep your equipment running, that sort of thing. They found that on the industry side, machinery dealerships and manufacturers, despite having factory shutdowns in Europe and Asia and South America and North America as well, entire factories had to shut down due to COVID outbreaks. Parts supply and the new equipment still seem to be available and moving. And the dealers did a great job. I mean, we have a story about how dealerships took a look at their operations and said, okay, we're going to put somebody by the door. We're going to pile a bunch of boxes of oil and antifreeze in front of the parts counter to make sure that nobody gets within 6 feet of the counter. Because I'm a farmer, and like most farmers, you get up to the parts counter and then you lean on it and then you lean forward to be able to have a look at the guy's monitor. Who's handling your parts desk. So that has to stop, all of those things. I mean, but the adaptability to make sure that the actual parts that you came to get were in place, and there wasn't any shortage, and that kept all the equipment running. So, I mean, seeding came off on time, spraying came off on time, and the weather was a little helpful this fall, but the crop came off on time. The railways have been there to get the crop out. That's in that sense, the amount of flexibility and adaptability, everybody has stepped up along the way. On the beef side, it looked like it could be a big problem when we started seeing the packers closing due to COVID. And for those directly affected by it, of course, it was a big problem. But it was a temporary problem. The packers stepped up, and they managed to make their operations safer. And when it came to reducing the spread inside those plants, and that's no small challenge. Plants reopened or stepped back up to near full capacity, and so while some beef got held back at the feedlot level and maybe the fall run was a little delayed, and we saw carcass sizes grow. It was counterintuitive. People the consumer market for beef was strong, but the carcass sizes grew because there was a bit of a holdback in the system. However, that's back to more or less full capacity as well. So a lot of flexibility there. On the pig side, the same thing. There was some real fear that we were going to see have to face a lot of animal destruction along the way because packers wouldn't be able to take the product. And in fact, we bounced back through that as well. Poultry and dairy. There was a little bit of milk dumping, but that too has passed. Canada has, of course, a fairly robust system to manage its dairy production, so we didn't end up with a whole lot of product being wasted. Overall, I mean, the overall flexibility of Canadian agriculture has possibly that's there just because people have been managing uncertainty and risk in their businesses and in their personal lives, living in rural communities all their lives. The tradition of being able to get through drought or flood, to be able to get by when some of the tools you wanted aren't available, you manage to make do. And sometimes those tools are money. The federal government needs some credit for definitely stepping up and ensuring that as we headed towards seeding, there was no shortage of available cash to get the crop in. So the borrowing was loosened by FCC, and that, of course, sends a ripple through the rest of the lending institutions. So there was no shortage of money to make the crop happen and to keep livestock moving. The system worked, and if you were an ag business, of course, you had the opportunity to step in and take advantage of some of the employment programs so that you could help cover your losses and keep people employed where otherwise you might not have had that flexibility. We've just overall the ag industry has shown terrific resiliency. And but it's kind of built around being resilient. And so it makes sense that that happened.
Well, Mike, it's a great issue, and I suppose most of our listeners probably get the physical paper at home, and they can go and look for that December 31st issue if they haven't already gone through it. And if not, they can also see it online at producer.com.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks very much, Mike, for joining us today.
Thanks, Ed.
That was Mike Rain, who is the editor of The Western Producer. This is Between the Rows. 2020 was a fascinating year in the agricultural markets. Some trends took many observers by surprise. Others felt vindicated in their expectations. For some perspective on this, I spoke with Bruce Burnett, the Director of Weather and Markets Information for Glacier Markets Farm. Hello, Bruce, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Ed.
So, Bruce, we had a rather dramatic 2020, much more dramatic than most of us ever expected. And now we're going into 2021, which still has a pandemic in it, and there's a lot of random factors out there. So I'm wondering, as a guy who stays atop of all the market trends out there in many markets, what is it you are most following this year? I guess the trends that you're wondering if they continue, turn, or stop?
Yeah, I think there's a number of things to look out for in the upcoming year. And essentially, we're currently in one of those memorable rallies that we've had over time, two or three in the last 20 years or so, where we're seeing markets moving upwards very, very quickly. And the question is, essentially for next year, do these higher prices stick around? And so there's a number of things I think we need to monitor as we go through this upcoming year. And I think the first thing, which is obvious, which is the market, is what the market is actually currently trying to get its handle on, is what is the weather situation going to be like in South America? We're about halfway through the growing season there. Things have not been really all that positive in terms of their growth, certainly not for producing a record crop this year. So we're seeing some cutback in their production numbers. And that's going to influence both the corn and soybean markets, which in Western Canada also supports our canola and grain markets. So I think that's the thing to look out for the next few months. More importantly, I think as we go along, I think taking a look at how crop conditions and crop planting go in the spring is going to be absolutely critical here to the markets for the upcoming year. So this is more about how much supply is the world going to have for both corn and soybeans, as well as wheat, as well as canola and other oil seeds is absolutely critical here. Or we'll see how prices stay very, very high, or at least at elevated levels compared to the past number of years.
Yeah, the rallying a few of the crops has been pretty stunning. You know, with canola, it's so funny. If you look at the short-term charts, it doesn't look that crazy if you look at 3 or 6 months. But if you run it to a longer duration, it's a stunning nosebleed rise we've had with canola. And I don't think too many people were calling for this, 6 months ago or a year ago.
Now, having said that, I think the market knew generally that we were going to be in a tight oilseed situation, vegetable oil situation, not necessarily an oilseed situation. And certainly at the beginning of last year, that was the case. And then COVID hit. And that essentially took some demand out, especially the biofuel sector. So vegetable oil prices dropped pretty dramatically. Now, since then, we've seen the economy recover a bit, but we're seeing some very, very tight vegetable oil supplies, which, of course, is very, very positive and bullish for the canola market. So that's certainly been the chief driving factor for canola this year. And then you add in a bit of a production problem in Canada here, production problems in Europe on the canola side, in Ukraine. All of those have tightened the world rapeseed situation up considerably. So that's certainly supporting prices as well.
And on the demand side, I mean, I think a year ago when the COVID news began leaking out and we all began to get a little anxious about this thing we heard was a real problem in China and was beginning to pop up, you know, over the next 3 months, the first, well, I guess, especially January, February, we began hearing cases showing up in places like Canada, Europe, and elsewhere. A lot of people would have speculated that demand would have taken a real hit and that there would have been all sorts of supply chain breaks. Were you surprised at all about, I guess, how strong the ag markets were in spite of the pandemic's impact? And did you see anything, I guess, surprising in how the various supply chains and markets have managed this thing so far?
Actually, I was very positive on demand for agricultural food products during the pandemic. It sort of went to the mantra of people need to eat. And I think that's the fundamental difference between a lot of the commodities that farmers grow versus other commodities like metals and oil that are far more dependent on the economy. So I wasn't surprised that we held up quite well. Again, the supply chain, it depends on what you're talking about. We did have big problems in the livestock supply chain. You know, I don't think that should have been too surprising given how the disease is or works, how COVID-19 worked. But in terms of the grain sector, I was reasonably optimistic that we could manage the system so that our exports could continue. Again, what we've seen is some very exceptional demand, though, for Canadian exports, and we're certainly running well ahead of previous years in terms of how much grain we've shipped during this crop year, as well as in the last part of the previous crop year.
And I guess a real wild card factor right now in the world is currency exchange rates, which obviously have a big, you know, effect in the commodity markets. And the Canadian dollar, U.S. dollar, they have been interesting to watch, to say the least. What is your outlook on that for the coming 12 months?
Well, again, currencies are normally difficult to forecast, but I think the consensus is around the U.S. dollar that we're going to see a continued weakness. I personally think it's going to be very hard for us to move that U.S. dollar index down to, let's say, the 86 or 87 point level, which is sort of an area of chart resistance, at least anyway, for it. So, but, you know, again, we're trading around the 89 point level right now on the U.S. dollar. So there still is some downward movement left. In terms of the Canadian dollar, I was very negative on the Canadian dollar at the first start of the pandemic. But again, with this U.S. dollar weakness, that generally means that the Canadian dollar will probably continue its rally here. So that's not the best news for farm gate prices in Western Canada, but given where the overall prices are and the demand increases that we're seeing because of the weaker U.S. dollar, I think that sort of is something we'll live with. But I see a Canadian dollar continuing to be relatively strong here in through the next quarter or two, at least anyway, until the economy start to revive.
Well, it's going to be an interesting year to watch, that's for sure. So thank you very much, Bruce, for joining us here today.
Thanks, Ed.
Bruce Burnett is Director of Weather and Markets Information for Glacier Markets Farm. This is Between the Rows. That's all for this week. Today's music tracks were Coming Back by Lobo Loco and Earth and Sun and Leading Me On by Derek Clegg. I think I'm safe in saying that it's going to be an interesting and challenging year, but hopefully challenging in a good way. I'm Ed White, and I wish you a happy week.
I've been farming my whole life, and the one thing you can always count on is change. And now there's a new generation of inoculants from Lalemon Plant Care. New engineered granules in Lalfix Spherical for pulses and soybeans that provide improved handling and accurate metering. new rhizobium and Lalfix Pro Yield that deliver improved nitrogen fixation and iron uptake in soybeans. I've seen a lot of change, but this Lalaman company, well, this changes everything. Contact your Lalaman sales representative today.